Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. In today's show, we talk to Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts of the Minnesota National Guard about his role as a counter-drug aviator. And we take a look at the Minnesota's Veterans Higher Education Program with Don Peffer. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Since September 11, 2001, more than 2 million service members have deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan. This includes more than 19,000 citizen soldiers and airmen from the Minnesota National Guard. The duration and frequency of these deployments are unprecedented since the establishment of America's all-volunteer force in 1973. With this increased exposure to combat stress, there has been a growing number of service members' service-related mental health issues. In addition, we cannot forget the military families are not immune to the stresses of deployment. Nationwide, there are 700,000 military spouses and an additional 400,000 spouses of reserve component members. More than 700,000 children have experienced one or more parental deployments. Currently, 220,000 children have a parent deployed. Put plainly, the cumulative impact of multiple deployments is associated with more emotional difficulties among military children and more mental health issues among spouses. While military families are strong, we must always seek to address the stressors that erode that resilience and stressful situations that are preventable. First and foremost, we must commit ourselves to the idea that early recognition and treatment seeking is a sign of new strength for our soldiers and airmen, as well as their family members. So many times, we are asked to drive on in face of adversity. We need to pause and remember that while this applies to many things, it does not include our mental health or the mental health of our spouses and children. Here in Minnesota, our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program serves as a national model for reintegration efforts. The program, located online at beyondtheyellowribbon.org, serves as a focal point for programs and services that assist soldiers, airmen, and their families before, during, and after deployments. I encourage all of those serving in the military, including spouses and family members, to take a look at this site and to start to look at the resources available. On a national level, the President has undertaken several commitments to improve the access that service members and their family members have to mental health care. These efforts, including expanding the VA's readjustment counseling service to include family members, conducting statewide policy workshops, as well as expanded programs and benefits for military family members. In addition, the Minnesota National Guard has long advocated two of the President's priorities, the expansion of TRICARE mental health treatment and accreditation, as well as efforts to prevent and address suicide within the military community. We will and must continue our hard work to ensure that all soldiers and airmen and all military family members receive prompt preparation and treatment for mental health issues that derive from deployments.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through MinnesotaNationalGuard.org/generallyspeaking. This week, Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts joins us. He is an aviator with the Minnesota National Guard. Mr. Roberts, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Mr. Roberts, can you tell me how long have you been in the National Guard?
I just rolled over 13 years now. I joined right out of high school, so 13 years September.
And I understand you started out as a helicopter mechanic?
I did. UH-1 Huey mechanic. Went to school Fort Rucker, Alabama for that, and then came home and turned a couple of wrenches, but quickly went over and became an aviator.
How did that happen?
Good story, actually. I was brand new in the military. I didn't know much, and I had a buddy who had maybe a couple of years on me for experience, and said, hey, look, they're holding a board to select new aviators. I said, nah, I'm too young. I can't do that. Or too new. You know, I'm not ready for that. He said, come on, do it. You know, you get your name out there and see what they say. So based kind of on a little positive peer pressure, did it. I guess I did something right. Impressed him during the interview and some of my, I was an honor graduate during that mechanic school and all that stuff. So that probably helped out. But selected me in about a little over a year later. I was down at Fort Rucker, Alabama again, but this time to go to pilot school, not mechanic school.
Changed your life, didn't it?
Absolutely. One little conversation, a little dare almost changed my life completely.
That's terrific. I also understand you've been deployed to Iraq as a Medicare chopper pilot.
Yep, medevac pilot, medical evacuation. I was with Charlie Company 2 of the 211th over in Al Asad, Iraq, which was about 10 months in country. I've been home almost 2 years. And, you know, it was a really good time over there in Iraq and saw most of the country, worked with the Western, in the Western side of Iraq, which was directly supporting the Marines because they don't have their own medevac, so they use the Army's medevac.
So you're over there saving lives.
Saving lives and transporting necessary equipment and patients all around Iraq because there's different levels of care at certain bases. And so you pick them up and fly them in the middle of the night to a different hospital that can provide certain kinds of care. And funny enough, we would even fly those military working dogs. You know, if they got hurt, we'd have to fly them because they're military members as well.
Can you tell me about your most memorable mission?
Absolutely. My probably the one that sticks most with me for probably the rest of my life is we had an alert call to fly to Fallujah. I was based in Al-Takadim, Iraq, which is central western Iraq. And a quick launch. We had two aircraft because there's a lot of casualties. And we landed downtown Fallujah. And Fallujah certainly isn't as safe as Anoka, Minnesota, but definitely wasn't completely like in the original invasion, that kind of dangerous. But we had a Cobra gunship, Marine fully loaded Cobra flying escort for us and orbiting while we were on the ground. And people up on the buildings with AK-47s, so you're landing in a dusty parking lot, buildings surrounding you, and hoping those medics and people will get those patients on board as fast as possible so we can get moving.
Well, we're glad you got back safely.
Yeah, me too.
We're speaking with Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts, an aviator with the Minnesota National Guard, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Mr. Roberts, you are now involved in the counter-drug program of the Minnesota National Guard. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, correct. That's a full-time special orders. They call it active duty special work, and it's a full-time assignment in the state of Minnesota here at St. Paul. Counter-drug program has an aviation section. We also have other components to our unit where they work with law enforcement to deter the trafficking of drugs and things like that. My direct involvement is to take that big loud wind-making machine called the UH-60 Blackhawk, and we fly that up to the schools, and of course we get a warm reception when you land a $14 million loud helicopter in the middle of a ball field with the students all around, and we give a positive, or we are positive role models and give an anti-drug message to the kids, hoping that we can reach out to most of them and deter them from doing drugs in their lives.
Now, do you actually work with law enforcement agencies on other missions?
Absolutely. Not only do we have the police officers that are kind of the liaisons with the schools fly with us often, we also work in what I call the grown-up work. You know, we work with kids most of the time, but we also work with adults in the law enforcement community where we fly around and we look for those ambitious individuals that like to maybe grow some illegal plants in their property. So we work hand-in-hand with law enforcement to do some of that stuff.
To go out and find those illegal plots of crops.
Correct.
Interesting. And how do you find those seminars that you give to the students? Are they receptive? Are they paying attention?
Oh, absolutely. Not only when you're in the helicopter, you can see them all cheering and bouncing around like they probably had a couple cans of Mountain Dew for lunch, but they certainly are very interactive. They're very engaging. They like to ask you a lot of questions. And I certainly think we make a good good presentation, and you know, they're always engaged, and we make it fun. We don't just sit there and pound down like the drill sergeants would. You know, we're actually engaging, speak English to them, and in a fun setting, so they don't see us as kind of the enemy of unknown military members, but actually people that they can grow up to become like.
Sounds like a great and rewarding program.
Yeah, it's I have a fun. I can't believe it's my full-time job sometimes.
You're a lucky man. We'll continue our conversation with Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts, an aviator with the Minnesota National Guard. Mr. Roberts, when did you first become interested in becoming a pilot?
Well, I remember second grade was kind of when I really solidified that idea. I had a good friend whose dad was an airline pilot, and I thought that was the coolest thing. And then I think the nail in the coffin would be when I was a little bit older. I remember seeing the UH-1 Huey fly into a park near where I lived growing up. That was for a safety camp or something along those lines. I just remember thinking how cool that was to see that helicopter land there, and I actually got to interact with those pilots and crew members and just thought they were... You know, I usually think that they're standoffish and you can't go approach a military member. And I certainly remember they gave me the time of day to say hi to me and shake my hand and let me look at their cool helicopter. And you know, not so much that I necessarily knew I wanted to be a helicopter pilot. I just knew that being a pilot was what I wanted to be, and it didn't matter if I flew airplanes or helicopters or kites or balloons, something like that. I just knew I wanted to be a pilot.
And now you're part of the counter-drug program with the Minnesota National Guard, and what helicopters do you fly?
Now I'm flying the UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter.
Can you describe that to us?
Yeah, if you've ever seen the movie Black Hawk Down, that's that exact helicopter there, but it's a 22,000-pound helicopter. We can fly about 200 and some miles an hour. Has two large 1,500-horsepower engines, and we can get anywhere in the state in about 2 hours.
Wow.
Pretty capable helicopter.
Can you tell me about Red Ribbon Week in Minnesota?
Yeah, Red Ribbon Week is something that the military, it's actually a DEA-sponsored event, but they work close with the military because we send that same kind of message, that anti-drug message to students. It's the last week in October, and this last October, we flew the helicopter through several areas all over the state and actually directly contacted over 7,000 students and at several schools, and handed out numerous little ribbons and things like that to remember the message. The DEA puts out the Red Ribbon Week because of the special agent Enrique Camarena, who was murdered back in the mid-80s down in Mexico, and his whole push was to keep the kids off drugs because he figured that was the best place to start. Instead of trying to find the guys selling it, start with the youth. And so that message carries on today, and we support that with the DEA directly.
So the Red Ribbon Week is when you go out to as many schools as you can reach.
That's our approach. I mean, they talk to students, and certainly our non-helicopter-owning counterparts go out and talk as well. But, you know, we are able to cover a much broader area because, like I said, we can get anywhere in the state. We cover the whole state during that week and land at a school's field and just get out and talk to them right there at the field, or we go into an auditorium and present to several hundreds of students at one time.
Is this just one helicopter and crew, or are there more?
Nope, just one helicopter and crew. So that's, I think, 7,000 kids in 1 week is pretty impressive for a few guys in a helicopter.
Covered a few miles that week.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Do you think you're having a positive effect with the children?
Absolutely. I think I'm proof positive of that. I mean, like I said, my story of being mesmerized, if you will, by that helicopter coming in going, wow, that's really neat. I think I could do something like that. Now, I didn't see that path like the yellow brick road directly to this job, but it opened up, and I thought, wow, what a cool deal. Now I get to be that guy coming down and to make an impression on the youth to stay drug-free, and maybe you can be cool and be in the aviation community sometime when you grow up.
Oh, when you go to these schools and you land on the field or the parking lot, do the students get to come up and see the helicopters?
Absolutely, yeah. They obviously, the Black Hawk puts down a pretty good force. We try to keep them back. I mean, Black Hawk can blow over a fully loaded infantryman if it's too close, you know, knock him over. So we try to make sure those kids are far back so we don't blow any rocks and debris on them. But when we're shut down and it's nice and safe, we usually have a little challenge for a couple of students that were paying attention. And so we pick a couple of good kids that sit up in the front. And by good, I mean the ones that maybe were a little rambunctious. Put them up in front and let them kind of sit center stage while their peers walk around the helicopter. They get to touch it and look at it and smell it all they want and ooh and ah. So it's pretty remarkable.
Planting seeds for the next generation aviators.
Absolutely, yep.
That's terrific. Now back to your drug interdiction program. Excuse me. You work with law enforcement agencies, schools, community organizations. What type of areas do you spend your time in? Is it counter drug interdiction?
No, actually, we're not interdiction. We just are the vessel. We're the helicopter. We, you know, as military members, have no authority. So it's kind of like this. We have the big toy that's already paid for. And other law enforcement agencies don't have a helicopter. They don't have that resource. So we have special arrangements where we work hand in hand. You know, we work with DARE, other community-based organizations, and then, of course, local law enforcement. You know, we go far up north to some small precincts and areas where, you know, maybe they have only three squad cars for an entire county. So we can take that helicopter, and those counties are huge. We can cover that entire county in a matter of a day, you know, a working day versus what it takes them probably 2 or 3 weeks if they had to drive around to suspected locations within their county.
So do you do some training with these various law enforcement agencies?
Oh, yeah. We like to take, you know, obviously the safety aspect of getting in a helicopter. It's kind of overwhelming to some people at first. So we like to plan ahead and get them familiarized with the helicopter. And we'll do that up at Camp Ripley. I'm sure everybody kind of knows where Camp Ripley is, central Minnesota, big area. And we show them the inner workings of the helicopter, put them in, put them off, make sure they do it safely. And, of course, we give them what we call their nickel ride, you know, where we get to fly low and fast like we've been trained to do and show them kind of the capabilities of the helicopter. And most of them enjoy it, and some of them don't feel so good after that flight.
I suppose. Can you give us an example of a mission when you were called in by a local law enforcement agency and asked for some help?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done all over that. We've worked with the National Forestry Service, Midwest Wisconsin, which is, crossing borders. But, for a federal program, we work with a lot of those agencies. And middle of Minnesota, a couple of years ago, we were flying along. It's not like we just, just fly along just for the fun of it. We, there's some kind of intelligence based on it, things like that, some kind of people that they are having their eye on, the law enforcement have their eye on. So we fly around and happen to fly over that right area. Certainly you can find some ambitious people growing some illegal plants.
Now, if I'm a sheriff way out in state Minnesota and I suspect some kind of drug activity, under what circumstances could I call you and ask you to help?
Well, I guess you're not going to call me directly, but the chain of events would get in touch with our higher up, if you will, like our commander, and send in an official request. And if the official request is approved, then we'll go pick you up and fly around and look at your areas.
So it just helps them cover more ground and see it from the air and gather up more evidence?
Yeah, absolutely, because, them driving up to an area doesn't necessarily, they can't necessarily see everything from the ground, where you can get that bird's eye view and you can see all over. So they can, cover that long distance and see long ways, and you can see what people are growing behind their shed instead of having to get, it's a longer process to do it on the ground, where we can just fly over, because there's nothing really stopping us from traveling in the air.
It's free airspace, isn't it?
Exactly.
Do you have any special equipment for this drug program?
None that I really want to talk about beyond just our visual acuity.
All right. You got to be a good pilot and you have to be able to see, don't you?
We have other, many sets of eyes on board that have been doing it for a few years. So you learn how to kind of spot some of those suspected areas.
Now, when you go out and you visit these schools and you see some of these young folks, do they ever ask you questions about how do I become a pilot?
Absolutely.
Like it?
Yeah, and surprisingly, a lot of young girls are really looking forward to doing stuff like that, where they, it's typical, a guy grows up with trucks and planes and wants to be a pilot or, a truck driver or something like that. But a lot of the girls are really growing up and thinking that's a cool job. And so they're asking a lot of questions, and many of them have said, how do I get into it? And certainly the ones that are really ambitious will pull you aside and ask you, how did you do it, and what's military training like, and what's military life like? And I certainly tell them it's one of the best decisions I ever made, and I've never regretted it. And I mean, how can you go wrong when you're doing something you love from a young age?
And what would you say today to the listeners if they were interested in becoming a pilot?
Say, basically, you do the right thing. I tell you what I do when our target audience is a little bit of the younger kids, but I summarize it. We talk about the effects of drugs on the body and doing the right thing. And I kind of sum it up with, three little rules. I say, stay in school, stay off of drugs, and stay out of trouble with the law. Because I look at it like this: if I had dropped out of school, started doing a lot of drugs, and had a long list of all the stupid things I did growing up, I wouldn't be sitting in that front seat of a $14 million helicopter.
Mr. Roberts, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts, an aviator with the Minnesota National Guard Counter Drug Team. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. When Specialist Gary Mitchell heard about a $500 grant for the children of deployed service members from his commander, he immediately let his wife Kate know. The young couple, who were preparing for Gary's second deployment in Iraq, had a 5-year-old daughter, Dinah, who wanted nothing more than to learn to play piano. With Kate only getting about 20 hours a week, money for anything but the essentials was tight, let alone the hundreds of dollars needed for Dinah's lessons. That's why it was such a relief for the Mitchells to hear about the grant offered by Our Military Kids. The organization's sole purpose is to get families of deployed service members funding for their children's extracurricular activities. Once Gary was sent overseas, Kate applied for the grant online. Our Military Kids wrote a check to Dinah's piano instructor. Money for the grant, provided by the Army National Guard, was just recently approved for 2011. This will allow more than 2,700 military families to utilize the grant. Now Dinah can start thinking about the upcoming piano recital. Thank you, Our Military Kids, for showcasing how Minnesotans strive to go beyond the yellow ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can, like our military kids, make a difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll look at Veterans Higher Education Program with Don Peffer. That's right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelido.
College is no longer just for the young traditional student. Education has followed along with the rest of Minnesota and experience changed. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Higher Education Program is helping keep up with that change by building the innovators of tomorrow. How does this program operate? We work closely with students to help them navigate the complex world of financial programs available to veterans. We also provide the support they need to stay in school and earn their degree. Benefits operate on a sliding scale based on duration and time of service, as well as active duty time versus National Guard or reserve duty. We help students navigate this system. We also work closely with schools around the state to create veteran-friendly policies. Our goal is to help students stay in school by providing support tailored to the unique challenges veterans face, including deployments, state active duty, and combat-related health issues. More veterans are coming home for more. More veterans want to take advantage of the college benefits they have earned. This important program is designed to help them succeed. To give you an example of the impact of this program, in 2010, our 12 statewide campus reps made nearly 57,000 contacts with veteran students, a 31% increase over 2009. Unfortunately, while we're seeing increased usage, this program is facing a possible shutdown when the funding stops later this year. It is our strong hope that state leaders see the value of continuing this program. Not only is it the right thing to do, it benefits our state. Last year, the state of Minnesota received $95 million in federal veteran and military education benefits. In addition, creating a highly trained workforce will provide a needed boost to Minnesota's economy in the long term. For more information on this impressive program, visit us on the web at mymilitaryeducation.org.
Larry Shelido. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. This week, Don Peffer joins us. He is director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Veterans Higher Education. Mr. Peffer, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom, for having me here. I appreciate visiting with you.
Don, I know that you're a veteran. Can you tell us what service you were in?
Well, I'd like to say the best service, but they're all good. But I was in the Air Force, active duty 71 to 75. I happen to be in the Air Force Intelligence Service. So that should tell you a little bit about what I did. But and then I joined the Minnesota Air Guard in 1985 and retired from there in 2002.
Gives you some pretty good background for working with veterans in higher education.
Absolutely. Plus, I've been a teacher and a college counselor and actually a high school counselor for a while as well. So I've had a pretty good background working with individuals, and particularly those individuals looking to move on into the education system.
You're also a faculty member at Central Lakes College, Brainerd, Minnesota.
That is correct. I'm temporarily on loan to the Department of Veterans Affairs and have been since July of 2006. But I do teach psychology courses and general studies courses. Matter of fact, this last fall I created and taught a course called From Combat to College, which explored the history of veterans returning home and their entrance into the college systems.
I should come up there and take that course myself, Don.
Yes, excellent.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
And now you're in charge of the higher education programs for veterans.
That's correct. Yes, I'm the state director.
Can you tell us what that means?
Sure. First off, I think we need to back up and give a little bit of background. We were started in 2006, but we didn't just start out of the blue. We, Minnesota had approximately 3,000 Guard members deploy in late 2005, And the TAG at that time, General Shelto, was very concerned about their return and the impact it would have on the state of Minnesota as well as their own well-being. And one of the issues that the adjutant at that time knew was that higher education was a great opportunity for individuals to truly reintegrate into society and to truly return home based on his own personal experiences. And so he, working with the legislature, was able to come up with some money, which in the 2006 session was passed. And July 1st, the Department of Veterans Affairs hired me to develop and implement the higher education veterans programs.
Now, Don, when we were in the Air Force back in the 70s, when I came back and went to school, there was a veteran service officer on virtually every campus, I think.
Correct.
But they were phased out over the years, were they not?
Absolutely. Those were federally funded. And they were brought back, they were brought into the system, into the education system, because of the need for the returning veterans, many of them who had some issues coming home and readjustment issues, that they needed support and help to get funding and to make sure they had a successful reintegration. Those were phased out. I think the last one probably ended about 10 years ago. And the reason they ended is that society and the federal government as a whole believed that we had served the population for which it was targeted.
One of the things that you were tasked with doing was to open those up again.
Absolutely. And in most cases, most campuses didn't even know what a veteran center was. I think I ran into one. I think it was up at Bemidji State University, where they actually knew what a veteran center was because theirs had closed, probably the last one in the state.
And I know you've been busy. How many are you up to now?
Well, we started with in 2006, we identified three programs on campuses that could be called veteran centers. One of them was at Central Lakes College, and it happened to be a program I started in February of 2006. And then there were two others. We're now up to 62, and we've kind of picked the easy fruit, as we like to say. And now we're dealing more with campuses that for a variety of reasons. It's been a little bit harder to get a center going. But we serve the Minnesota State College and University system, which is the largest system in Minnesota of 2- and 4-year colleges. And we serve the University of Minnesota, all 5 of their campuses. And we also serve private colleges. So we're non-denominational in terms of our emphasis in working with veterans on campuses.
We're speaking with Don Peffer for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Don, I've just got to ask you this, since you started on this program, how many veterans are taking advantage of it, and how's that building over the years?
Well, there's several ways we look at that. One is how many people were certified for GI Bill benefits. This is the federal benefits. Primarily veterans, but some family members are included in this. And in 2006, in Minnesota, there were under 5,000 people, about 46 people certified for benefits. As of December of 2010, we're at 12,285. So we've just about tripled the number of people being certified for benefits in the time period that we've been in operation.
Now, as a Vietnam veteran, when I think about the GI Bill for education, it was pretty simple. It was just one kind of program.
That's right.
It's not anymore, is it?
No, no. There are so many different programs, and programs are individual-specific, and the commissioner mentioned that there's various different levels depending on your branch of service, primarily whether it's reserve, guard, or active duty, and also the types of service. Benefits are not consistent between types of services. As far as the GI Bill, it's based on your individual number of months of active duty service, the new GI Bill is. And also, there's some programs for Guard members who haven't deployed yet. There's those who've deployed for a few short months but maybe haven't earned yet full Chapter 33. What we look at is there's a possibility of 4 to 5 different programs individuals have to choose from. And if they choose one or the other, they have to give up some of them. So very, very complex. It's even worse than doing your taxes.
All the more reason to establish those offices to help our veterans.
Yeah, absolutely. They're very thankful that we're there.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about those programs. We'll continue with our conversation with Don Peffer after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Don Peffer, the Director of Veterans Higher Education Program for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Don, just before the break, we were talking about the complexity of the GI Bill for education. It's really much more difficult to understand today, and that's why you've established all of these places and referral sources for where do they go? Where do the veterans go for help?
That's correct. It's extremely complex. What we have, we developed a system. We broke the state into six regions. And within those regions, we have a minimum of at least one coordinator. In some cases, we have two, and in the metro area, we have three. But these are the eyes and ears and the heartblood of our program. These are the individuals, the regional coordinators, I call them. They serve a series of campuses anywhere from 4 to about 14, depending on the size of the region. And they go right on the campuses. They're the daily contact with veterans and family members and personnel from the college. And they're really what makes the program work and why these kind of statistics that I mentioned earlier are happening.
Now, some of these programs, I think, are a bit more complicated because the Guard has been deployed numerous times since 2001.
Right.
And those, even though they're still in the Guard, they're veterans and they're eligible, aren't they?
Absolutely. They're veterans. And even if they haven't deployed, there's a program for them. There's a GI Bill program for them. But they're growing in numbers, and some of the statistics I saw from 2008 say that about 4 to 5% have gone as many as six times. And this is some national figures.
On deployments,
yeah. So
you've partnered with the Guard to help these troops.
We partner very, very closely. Matter of fact, we are an authorized training entity. When the Guard gets a request from a unit to have training done about education benefits at the unit level, we're the ones that go in and do it for them. So we make sure we coordinate very closely with the Guard. We have a tremendous partnership, and we help support their mission by helping their members be up on what's available for them in terms of benefits and services, and it's a very good partnership. In addition, we work with the entire Yellow Ribbon program, and we work with all of the reintegration activities. As a matter of fact, I'm sending a troop out to Fort Lewis this weekend to work with some returning Guard members.
So you actually go to the units and help them when they're returning from deployment?
Yeah, actually I misspoke. It's Fort Polk down in Louisiana, not Fort Lewis. We just got back from Fort Lewis a little while ago. Fort Polk, yes. We go right out to greet them when they come home, and we're there to say goodbye to them when they leave, and then we work with their families while they're gone, and then we work with them again, you know, after they come back and they settle in and they decide they want to attend college.
Now, Don, you've got a website with a lot of information on it. Is it mymilitaryeducation.org?
Correct. That's a site we created. It was created in response to the 3,000 individuals coming home in 2007. And if you remember, they had a 125-day extension. And that extension overlapped into the start of college. So what happened was we had a tremendous number of inquiries from parents and significant others back home what their soldiers needed to do to make sure they didn't lose out, as well as getting contact from soldiers ourselves. So we created an electronic site in partnership with a entity out of Perham, Minnesota, a little town of Perham, called Minnesota Online, and they're affiliated with the MINSQ system. But we were able to create an electronic site that now has grown into national and international implications. About a third of our contacts come from overseas, from our military members from Minnesota deployed. We get them from all over the United States. We had 71,000 contacts last year, and it's growing in leaps and bounds.
And once again, that's mymilitaryeducation.org?
Correct.
Is that a good place for a veteran to start?
Absolutely. That's a place if you want more information about anything that I talked about today that you can go to, mymilitaryeducation.org.
And Don, what are the biggest challenges facing you and your team now?
Well, the biggest one right now is to get continued funding after June 30th this year. We generally have great bipartisan support in the legislature and governor support, and we're counting on that again. But this is the last year of our program if something doesn't happen in terms of funding.
And there's a lot of demand and a lot of uncertainty on what benefits are available.
Absolutely. So the number of individuals are increasing in leaps and bounds. The programs are becoming more and more complex. And the one service that is there to help them may not exist after June 30th.
And once again, for the veterans listening, where do they go to find out about their educational benefits?
The best place to start is with our call center. They'll get you directed to an individual that will work with you closely, and it's mymilitaryeducation.org.
All right, Don, thanks for joining us today. Keep up the good work.
It's a pleasure, Tom. I'd be happy to come back anytime and talk more about education.
We'll take you up on that. That was Don Peffer, the Director of Veterans Higher Education Program for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining us today from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is Sergeant First Class Melody Nelson. Sergeant Nelson, welcome to the show. What's in the mailbag today?
Hi, Tom. Well, we have a really timely question in the mailbag today. This listener writes, I saw several military stories during coverage of Hockey Day Minnesota yesterday. Can you tell me more about the hockey and military ties in this state?
Sounds like a great question.
It is a good question, and we have a lot of ties between hockey and military here in Minnesota. And one organization called Defending the Blue Line was started in 2008 by an E-8, a master sergeant named Shane Hudella from Hastings. And his organization, Defending the Blue Line, their whole mission is to get hockey equipment into the hands of military kids. And they started here in Minnesota, Tom, and just recently, they've expanded their efforts at a national level, so that's really cool. Another thing, Tom, did you know that we have a military hockey league here in Minnesota?
You got me on that one, Melanie. I did not know that.
I didn't know it either, but we have a group of Marines, Air Force Reservists, Army, and Air Guard service members who meet every spring and every fall for a big hockey tournament right here in Minnesota somewhere. And I also, besides just reaching out to Defending the Blue Line, I did have to do a quick call to a friend of ours at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Brian Bellows from the Wild. I'm sure most hockey fans know his name. And I asked him this question. He said that one thing that the Wild have done recently is that they have a National Guard soldier who hands the state of hockey flag to the youth at the beginning of every single day, of every single game that the Wild play. And he said it's just a really neat part of the game to bring the military in before every Wild game is played here in Minnesota.
So, Sergeant Nelson, if we have some military families listening and the children need some hockey equipment, what do they do?
Good question. You can go directly to defendingtheblueline.com. You can also call Shane Hudella, 651-253-6737. And he did let me know that there's something really cool going on here just in the next couple of weeks. On February 22nd, the Wild will be having a camouflage jersey night where they'll be wearing camouflage jerseys during the warm-up period. And those jerseys will be auctioned off to raise money to further help more military kids through Defending the Blue Line.
And for all other information and questions about your program, where do they go for that?
BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org.
All right. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Sergeant Melanie Nelson. And if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com and let us know what's on your mind. We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Chief Warrant Officer Ryan Roberts from the Minnesota National Guard, Don Peffer from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Larry Shelado, and finally, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the Yellow Ribbon community of Hugo and Minnesota during World War II. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.